Okay, so what did you guys talk about last week?
We talked about the book.
What book?
C.S. Lewis.
My mom.
Okay.
Something
C.S. Lewis.
We started The Great Divorce, which is the one about the book.
Has everybody heard of C.S. Lewis?
Yes, something.
Okay.
His middle name is Stibbles, and that's great.
Charles Stibbles.
Yes. Clive.
It's Clive.
It's even better. Clive.
Clive.
Don't you want that name?
Yes.
I would
we learned about.
If my name was Clive Staples, I would be the happiest person
okay,
on the planet.
We line. Learned about the people at the bus stop.
Okay, yeah. So what is the name of the book?
Great Town.
Great
oh, no. That's the name of the place in the book.
The Great Horse.
Correct.
Okay. So why is it called The Great Divorce?
They're separated.
It's separation.
It's separation.
Is it about marriage?
No, it is not.
No, right. It is. And what type of story is that? It uses metaphors.
It is
a representative story. It is a literary term.
It's
a literary term.
It starts with an A.
Yeah.
A literary term.
Huh? Allegory.
Allegory.
Allegory, all right. So, what's another word for an allegory, a biblical word?
Did I say it?
Starts with a P.
A
parable, right?
Yes.
And what? So, similar to that, this is an allegory where the things in it are not themselves true or a real story or even anything that's exactly factual, but it's a representation of something else. And in this case, the divorce that is being talked about is a separation from God.
Okay. And it is specifically talking about in The Great Divorce two different places. Well, I'm a terrible speller, so it works out good. So it is talking in the book about two places. It is talking about heaven and it is talking about hell. And yes, and they call it Greytown. They call hell Greytown in the book. And it's not, the book isn't describing hell or heaven in any physical way or any exact representation. But it is much more looking at the characters and about what it means to be separated from God. Because in the end, if you end up spending eternity in hell, that means you are separated from God eternally. If you end up spending eternity in heaven, then you are continually in his presence and you are there because you believed in him, because you wanted to be there with him. So it's trying to describe a state of being, of being either separated from God or in his will and in his love. So, Greytown. Tell me about Greytown. Evan.
Okay, so
as you seem to really like Greytown.
Yeah. So they live in Greytown in these houses, I guess. But they always argue with everyone else, and when they argue with the other people, their houses just kind of slide apart from each other, and then they basically isolate themselves.
Okay, and why do they argue with each other and separate? Okay, yes, prideful. What's another word that we use for being prideful?
Selfish.
Selfish, right? Self-centered. And what was one person that they talked about specifically? You didn't read it in the book, but Levi told you about it. Napoleon, right? Oh, man.
P-O-L-E-O-N.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, good. Because Napoleon. Has anybody studied Napoleon in high school yet? You did.
Today we did.
So what, how would you describe his character?
Yeah. He's just... He's not that smart, you know. He messed everything up.
But what did he think of himself?
He thought he was pretty good.
Yeah, he thought he was pretty great, right?
Yeah.
So they use him as an example in the book. Not that he's saying that Napoleon is in hell. All right? We don't know. You could make a guess or whatever, but you don't know. Only God knows right now until maybe we'll know in the future. But we don't know. So, but he's trying to describe the type of character, the type of things that could cause you to stumble, that could cause you to end up separated from God. Okay? So, there is a bus stop, though, in Greytown. And what is, where does that bus stop take you if you get on that bus? Takes you on a tour of heaven. Takes you to go see what it's like. And what happened when they got on the bus? Everyone was waiting in line. Well, when they were waiting in line.
They were all fighting with each other.
Right. But what was interesting once they got on the bus?
Everyone else was happy.
Nope.
Not them. The people that were operating the bus.
Yes, the person operating the bus was happy. What else was an interesting fact when they got on the bus? One tiny...
The bus.
The colors, right? No?
Well, yeah. But there's something about the bus. As in... There were a lot of people waiting, and a lot of people got out of line.
Everyone wanted to get on the bus, but there was enough. Wasn't there enough room?
There was enough room for everybody. And in fact, it leads you to surmise, come to a conclusion about the bus, that it wouldn't matter how many people were waiting on the bus. There could have been a million people waiting on the bus, and there would have been room for every single person. So it's that right there in itself, there's little metaphors like that in this book of saying that there is always enough room for anybody who wants to go to heaven. There's never going to be, oh, sorry, we're last person, we're full, no more people. That's not the case when it comes to going to heaven. So this week, we're going to move on in the book, and... Tonight is, as we talk, is one that begs for unbridled honesty when talking about it. And that's really what this whole book is that C.S. Lewis is begging you to be honest with yourself, to evaluate yourself, and not our physical world or our physical being, but who we are in our soul and spirit. What your character is, what your spirit, the state of it is. Okay? So, as we read, you're going to need some understanding of the world and what the situation that this story is set in. So, we've already got some things like Greytown, and that the description of what heaven looks like when they arrive isn't really what heaven looks like. But there are some different characters, and first there's types of people there at heaven when we observe it. There's going to be, for one, there are going to be the ghosts. And the ghosts is everybody that's coming from hell to visit heaven. So anytime they refer to a ghost, that's somebody who's come from hell to visit heaven. And they are going to be people who, like a ghost, you can kind of see through them. They're like a wisp of smoke. They're kind of transparent, okay? The other people that you're going to see there are the solid, bright people. It's sometimes bright, not always. These are the people that live in heaven, we'll say. Okay. And an even better way to say it as far as what they represent are people that are in God's kingdom. Okay? What defines you if you are in God's kingdom? Your soul is something that is important in that definition, yes. Yes. So let me ask you this. Can you be in God's kingdom without being in heaven at this time?
No. Well, not physically.
Yeah.
Right, not physically, but yes, you can be, okay? Being in God's kingdom means that you believe in Him, that you follow Christ, that you are one of His, okay? That means to be in His kingdom. Because what did Jesus say when Pilate asked him if he was a king? Right, my kingdom is not of this world, okay? It doesn't have to do with, you know, the physical hard things the kingdom set up in the earth. It is a spiritual kingdom, okay? So you do not have to be present in heaven, although you will one day be present in heaven, okay? So anybody who is a solid person is someone who is in God's kingdom. Follows Christ. Okay, so then there's one other type of being, and this one really takes abstract thought for this one.
Angels?
Yes.
Levi said there was an angel that was like on wheels and burning, and he said that had a bunch of eyes on it, and that is not.
Yes, there is Ezekiel or. Yeah, Ezekiel saw those. Okay, but these are just the bright, or they're full of light. And they are, a better way to say is that they are servants of God, okay? Angels, but they are to represent beings that are acting on God's will, that are acting out His word, what He desires to happen. Okay? So, they have now, well, before we get there, hold on. Why do you think, looking at these people here, and if you don't, why do you think that these ghosts are wispy or transparent? What'd you say, Cameron? Sort of, yes. That kind of has to do with it. What is this book describing about physical things? No, it is not. It is not talking about physical things. So it's talking about spiritual things, right? So why would their physical body be ghost-like and transparent? Huh? Yes.
The solid people are dead too.
Technically, yes. Yep, they are. It might be because the physical portion of them doesn't matter anymore. And they never grew up spiritually. So they have nothing solid to make them solid when they arrive in heaven. So they're just a wispy, ghosty portion of their past now. Okay? So in the people in heaven, the solid, bright people, are bright because they have been filled with God's light for following Him and now shine forth. That's why they are solid. Okay? So their state all relies on how much they have allowed God into their life. Okay, so we are then going to pick up sort of where we left off, because we're not going to read every word in the book, but we're going to read a good portion of it to get a gist of it, okay? So we're going to pick up in chapter 4 now, and I'm going to read a few pages to you. And this is right after they have arrived in heaven. The bus has stopped and they have all emptied out of the bus. As the solid people came nearer, I noticed that they were moving with order and determination, as though each of them had marked out his man in our shadowy company. That is, each of these solid people, people in heaven, have found a ghost person, and you'll find out that they know that ghost person from Earth, and they're going to go and talk to them, okay? With that, I sidled away on some vague pretext of doing a little more exploring. A grove of huge cedars to my right seemed attractive, and I entered it. Walking proved difficult. The grass was hard as diamonds to my unsubstantial feet, made me feel as though I were walking on wrinkled rock, and I suffered pains like those of the mermaid in Hans Andersen. A bird ran across in front of me, and I envied it. It belonged to that country. It was as real as the grass, and it could bend the stalks and spatter itself with the dew. Almost at once, I was followed by what I would have called the big man, to speak more accurately, the big ghost. He, in his turn, was followed by one of the bright people. "Do you know me?" he shouted to the ghost, and I found it impossible not to turn and attend. The face of the solid spirit, he was one of those who wore a robe, made me want to dance, and was so jocund, so established in its youthfulness. So that right there is evidence of him being filled with God's spirit, that ghost, because it's so lively to him. It just makes him feel good by seeing just the way this person looks. "Well, I'm damned," said the ghost. I wouldn't have believed it. It's a fair knockout. It isn't right, Len, you know. What about poor Jack, eh? You looked pretty pleased with yourself. But what I say is, what about poor Jack? "He is here," said the other. "You will meet him soon if you stay." "But you murdered him." "Of course I did. It's all right now." "All right? All right for you, you mean. But what about the poor chap himself, lying cold and dead?" "But he isn't, I've told you. You will meet him soon. He sent you his love." "What I'd like to understand," said the ghost, "is what you're here for. As pleased as punch, you, a bloody murderer. While I've been walking the streets down there and living in a place like a pigsty all these years." "That is a little hard to understand at first, but it is all over now. You will be pleased about it presently. Till then, there is no need to bother about it." "No need to bother about it? Aren't you ashamed of yourself?" "No, not as you mean. I do look at myself. I have given myself. I had to, you know. After the murder, that was what did it for me, and that's how everything began." "Personally," said the big ghost, with an emphasis that contradicted the ordinary meaning of the word, "personally, I had thought that I ought to be the other way around. That's my personal opinion." "Very likely we soon shall be," said the other, "if you'll stop thinking about it." "Look at me now," said the ghost, slapping his chest, but the slap made no noise. I've gone straight all my life. I don't say I was a religious man. I don't say I had no faults, far from it. But I've done the best all my life, see? I've done my best by everyone. That's the sort of chap I was. I never asked for anything that wasn't mine by rights. If I wanted a drink, I paid for it. If I took my wages, I'd done my job, see? That's the sort I was, and I don't care who knows it. It wouldn't be much better to go on about that now." "Who's going on? I'm not arguing. I'm just telling you the sort of chap I was, see? I'm asking for nothing but my rights. You may think that you can put me down because you're dressed up like that, which you weren't when you worked under me. But I'm a poor man, but I got to have my rights, same as you, see? Oh, no, it's not as bad as that. I haven't got my rights, or I should not be here. You will not get yours either. You'll get something far better. Never fear. That's just what I say. I haven't got my rights. I always done my best, and I never done nothing wrong. And what I don't see is why I should be put below a bloody murderer like you. Who knows whether you will be. Oh, only be happy and come with me. What do you keep on arguing for? I'm only telling you the sort of chap I am. I only want my rights. I'm not asking for anybody's bleeding charity. Then do that at once. Ask for the bleeding charity. Everything here is the asking, is for the asking, and nothing can be bought. That may do very well for you, I dare say, but if they choose to let in a bloody murderer, all because he makes a poor mouth at the last moment, that's their lookout. But I don't see myself going in the same boat as you see. Why should I? I don't want charity. I'm a decent man, and if I had my rights, I'd be here long, have been there here long ago, and you can tell them I said so. The other shook his head. You can never do it like that, he said. Your feet will never grow hard enough to walk on the grass that way. You'd be tired out before you got to the mountains. And it isn't exactly true, you know. Mirth danced in his eyes as he said it. What isn't true? Asked the ghost sulkily. You weren't a decent man, and you didn't do your best. None of us were, and none of us did. Lord bless you, it doesn't matter now. There is no need to go into it all now. You, gasped the ghost. You have the face to tell me I wasn't a decent chap? Of course. Must I go into all that? I will tell you one thing to begin with. Murdering old Jack wasn't the worst thing I did. Here's the important thing here that the solid person has to say. That was the work of a moment, and I was half mad when I did. But I murdered you in my heart, deliberately, for years. I used to lie awake at night, thinking what I'd do to you if I ever got the chance. That is why I have been sent back to you now, to ask for your forgiveness, and to be your servant as long as you need one, and longer if it pleases you. I was the worst, but all of the men who worked under you felt the same. It made it hard for us to know you, and you made it hard for your wife, too, and for your children. You mind your own business, young man, said the ghost. None of your lips, see, because I'm not taking any impudence from you about my private affairs. There are no private affairs, said the other. And I'll tell you another thing, said the ghost. You can clear off, see? You're not wanted. I may be only a poor man, but I'm not making pals with a murderer, let alone taking lessons from him. Made it hard for you and your like, did I? If I had you back here, back there, I'd show you what work is. Come and show me now, said the other with laughter in his voice. It'll be a joy to go to the mountains, but there will be plenty of work. You don't suppose I'd go with you? Don't refuse. You will never get there alone, and I am the one who was sent to you. So that's the trick, as it said the ghost, outwardly bitter, and yet I thought there was a kind of triumph in its voice. It had been entreated. It could make a refusal, and this seemed his kind of advantage. I thought there'd be some damned nonsense. It's all a click, all a bloody click. Tell them I'm not coming, see? I'd rather be damned to go along with you. I came here by my rights, see? Not to go sniveling along on charity tied to your apron strings. If they're too fine to have me without you, I'll go home. It was almost happy now that it could, in a sense, threaten. That's what I'll do, it repeated. I'll go home. I didn't come here to be treated like a dog. I'll go home. That's what I'll do. Damn it and blast the whole pack of you. In the end, still grumbling, but whimpering. Also, as little as it picked its way over the sharp grass, it made off. Okay. So, this one solid person comes out, and he confronts this one ghost. And as they start to talk, you find out that they both knew each other on Earth. And who did they first bring up that they both mutually knew? Jack, all right? And what happened to Jack? He got murdered, right? And who murdered him?
The solid person.
Now, immediately, you would think, well, what is he doing there, right? He's in heaven, but he murdered someone? And then this ghost who's in hell isn't there. He's just visiting. Well, what does the person who's the ghost start insisting on? That he was a good person, right? And what does the solid person, how does he treat the ghost? No, that was the ghost who said that.
Oh.
I know, it's a little bit confusing. What is the solid person who killed Jack, the murderer, how does he treat the ghost?
He's very patient.
He's very patient with him, right? Maybe he's loving towards him. Shows a lot of kindness and forgiveness to him, right? What does it seem like he's trying to do for the ghost? What does he encourage him to do with him?
Follow him.
Right, to follow him and to stay there. That he'll be able to change and become like him. To become solid, to enjoy being there. But what does the ghost go on about? Keeps talking about stuff, keeps arguing with him about something.
His rights.
His rights, right? He's like, I've got my rights. I worked hard all my life. I wasn't religious, I wasn't perfect, but I've got my rights. I've worked hard and I deserve something. And he is unwilling to forgive the murderer, right? He can't believe that he's there and that Jack, who was murdered, is there, but he's not. So, what did the solid person, the murderer, say was the worst crime? There's two things that he said that he did regarding Jack and the ghost. Yeah. He said, yes, I killed Jack. He said, but when I did that, I was very pumped up on my emotions. He said, half mad or half crazy. Whether that means he really was, had a chemical imbalance or whatever it might have been, or maybe he was just saying that I wasn't thinking properly when I killed him. He said, that was bad, but really the worst thing that I did was I hated you every day. And I thought about how I could get back at you. And it seems as though this ghost was his boss when he was on Earth, that he worked for him. And they hated him all the time. But he says that after he murdered Jack, that he started to that changed him. Something happened. And what is implied here is that the Holy Spirit started to work on him, that God started to work on him. And he changed the way he thought about things. And everything that the solid one says, the murderer said, it was all focused on who. Who is he mostly talking about when he's talking to the ghost? No. He only mentions himself in one paragraph. Everything else that he's talking about is how to help the ghost. It's all focused on how he can help him. How he can help him enjoy and find the good things that he has found. So he's trying to help him to break down the wall of separation that he's built. The ghost has built a wall. Remember talking about a wall last week? That you can have a wall of separation between you and God. So you're going to see that a lot of these ghosts that have come on the bus and are here in heaven to visit the other people who are following God, that they are very unwilling to change, very unwilling to see a different perspective, unwilling to allow God to affect them, unwilling to have their hearts softened. We're going to read one more section tonight, and this one is about another ghost that's there in heaven, and our narrator is observing this ghost, and this one also is going to involve one of the bright ones, or one of God's servants, a supernatural being, an angel, as you might say, that is trying to help this ghost, all right? I saw coming towards us a ghost who carried something on his shoulder. Like all the ghosts, he was substantial, but they differed one from another as smokes differ. Some had been whitish, this one was dark and oily. What sat on his shoulder was a little red lizard, and it was twitching its tail like a whip and whispering things in his ear. As we caught sight of him, he turned his head to the reptile in a snarl of impatience. "Shut up, I tell you," he said. It wagged its tail and continued to whisper to him. He ceased snarling and then presently began to smile when he turned and started to limp westward away from the mountains. "Off so soon?" said a voice. The speaker was more or less human in shape, but larger than a man and so bright that I could hardly look at him. His presence smote on my eyes and on my body too, for the heat was coming off of him as well as light, like the morning sun at the beginning of a tyrannous summer day. "Yes, I'm off," said the ghost. "Thanks for your hospitality, but it's no good, you see. I told this little chap," here he indicated to the lizard, "that he'd have been quiet if he came, which he insisted on doing. But of course, this stuff here won't do, I realize that. But he won't stop. I shall just have to go home." "Would you like me to make him quit?" said the flaming spirit, an angel as I now understood. "Of course I would," said the ghost. "Then I'll kill him," said the angel, taking a step forward. "Oh, ah, look out, you're burning me. Keep away," said the ghost, retreating. "Don't you want him killed?" "You didn't say anything about killing him at first. I hardly meant to bother you with anything so drastic as that." "It's the only way," said the angel, whose burning hands were now very close to the lizard. "Shall I kill it?" "Well, that's a further question. I'm quite open to consider it, but it's a new point, isn't it? I mean, for the moment, I was only thinking about silencing it because up here, well, it's so damned embarrassing. May I kill it?" "Well, it's time to discuss that later." "There's no time. May I kill it?" "Please, I never meant to be such a nuisance. Please, really, don't bother. Look, it's gone asleep of its own accord. I'm sure it'll be all right now. Thanks ever so much. May I kill it?" "Honestly, I don't think there's the slightest necessity for that. I'm sure I will be able to keep it in order now. I think the gradual process will be far better than killing it." "The gradual process is of no use at all." "Do you think so?" "Well, I think I'll think over what you've said carefully. Honestly, I will. In fact, I'd let you kill it now. But as a matter of fact, I'm not feeling frightfully well today. It would be most silly for me to do it now. I need to be in good health for this operation. Some other day, perhaps." "There is no other day. All days are present now." "Get back. You're burning me. How can I tell you to kill it? You'd kill me if you did." "It's not so. Why are you hurting me now?" "I never said it wouldn't hurt you. I said it wouldn't kill you." "Oh, I know. You think I'm a coward. But that isn't it. Really, it isn't. I say, let me run back to tonight's bus and get an opinion from my own doctor. I'll come again at the first moment I can." "This mountain contains all moments. Why are you torturing me? You're jeering at me. How can I let you tear me in pieces? If you want to help me, why don't you kill the damn thing without asking me before I knew? It would be all over now if you had. I cannot kill it against your will. It is impossible. Have I your permission?" The angel's hands were almost closed on the lizard, but not quite. Then the lizard began chattering to the ghost so loud that even I could hear what it was saying. "Be careful," it said. "He can do what he says. He can kill me. One fatal word from you and he will. Then you will be without me forever and ever. It's not natural. How could you live? You'd be only a sort of ghost, not a real man as you are now. He doesn't understand. He's only a cold, bulbous, abstract thing. It may be natural for him, but it isn't for us. Yes, yes, I know there are no real pleasures now, only dreams. But aren't they better than nothing? And I'll be so good. I admit it. I've sometimes gone too far in the past, but I promise I won't do it again. I'll give you nothing but really nice dreams, all sweet and fresh and most innocent. You might say, quite innocent." "Have I your permission?" said the angel to the ghost. "I know it will kill me. It won't. But supposing it did?" "You're right. It would be better to be dead than to live with this creature." "Then may I?" "Damn and blast you. Go on, can't you? Get it over." Do what you like," bellowed the ghost, but ended whimpering, "God help me, God help me." Next moment, the ghost gave a scream of agony, such as I had never heard on earth. The burning one closed his crimson grip on the reptile, twisted it, while in a bit it writhed and flung broken backed on the turf. "Ow, that's done for me," gasped the ghost, reeling backwards. For a moment, I could make out nothing distinctly. Then I saw between me and the nearest bush, unmistakably solid, but growing every moment solider, the upper arm and shoulder of a man, then brighter still and stronger the legs and hands. The neck and golden head materialized as I watched, and if my attention had not wavered, I should not have seen the actual completing of an immense man, naked, not much smaller than the angel. What distracted me from the fact that the same moment something was happening to the lizard. At first I thought the operation had failed. So far from dying, the creature was now struggling and even growing bigger as it struggled. And as it grew, it changed. Its hinder parts grew rounder, the tail flickered, became a tail of hair that flickered between huge glossy buttocks. Suddenly I started back, rubbing my eyes. What stood before me was the greatest stallion I had ever seen, silvery white, but with a mane and a tail of gold. It was smooth and shining, rippled with the swells of flesh and muscle, whinnying and stamping its hoofs. At each stamp, the land shook and the trees dimmed. The new man turned and clapped the horse's neck. It nosed his bright body. Horse and master breathed into each other's nostrils. The man turned from it, flung himself at the feet of the burning one, and embraced them. When he rose, I thought his face shone with tears, but it must have been only the liquid love and brightness one cannot distinguish from them in that country, which flowed from him. I had not long to think about it. In joyous haste, the young man leapt upon the horse's back, turning in his seat. He waved a farewell, then nudged the stallion with his heels. They were off before I knew well what was happening. There was riding, if you like. I came out as quickly as I could from among the bushes to follow them with my eyes, but already they were like a shooting star off on the green plain, and soon among the foothills of the mountain. Then, like a star, I saw them winding up, scaling what seemed impossible steps, quicker every moment, till the near dim brow of the landscape, so high that I must strain my neck to see them. They vanished, bright themselves into a rose brightness of everlasting morning. Okay, so there's this ghost, and what does he have on his shoulder? A lizard, right? So I have this wispy ghost of a person. That's my terrible ghost of something abstract already. And there we go. Sort of a lizard there. And he's got a lizard on his shoulder. And the angel, or I would say the enactor of God's word, wants to kill it. And The ghost is not quite sure if that's what he wants to happen yet. He's thinking about it. He's going back and forth. But when he does give up and give in to the angel and allows him to kill it, it's the best thing that he ever did. Because what happens to him? Huh? And what happened to him? He became solid, right? And became a real person again instead of this ghostly figure. All right? An even better person than he ever was. And they ride off literally into the sunset. Right? Universal for a good ending to a story, right? Like I said, metaphors, allegories, it's not what would literally happen to you. It's symbolizing something. So, in that strain, what does the lizard symbolize?
Sin,
yes, but more than sin. Nope. You're along the right lines of that. Yes, those, all those things work into it, huh?
Lies.
Yes. He does have a lot of lies, right? He even says to him at one point, if you kill me, then we won't be a real person anymore. And he's not even a real person right now as he is, right? He's just a ghost of himself. But let's think about it. The lizard is there on his shoulders, all right? From what we can surmise, the lizard is always there with him, never leaves him. What do you think? The lizard obviously is representing sin, but what is he constantly doing? Whispering to him, right? It's not your conscience. Huh? Sort of. But let me ask you this, Jason. Do you think you have a red lizard?
Yeah, it's called temptation.
Temptation, right? Everybody here has a red lizard. It might not be the same red lizard, but we all have one, okay? I have one. We might even have more than one. I know I've got more than one, okay? So it's the temptation. It's, and it's more than that because it's always with him. It's an addiction to that temptation of sin. That's what this lizard is. And this is one of the genius allegories of C.S. Lewis here. It describes something that you can't just describe without a picture. It's so hard to describe it. And he uses this allegory to explain a feeling even better. And really to relate and to dissect this demands practical application and honesty. And like I said, I have some of my own lizards, and maybe even some of you may have the same lizard. Maybe you don't, but for me, one of those is procrastination. And you might think...
I have like five procrastination lizards.
It is a big lizard, right? But you might think, that's not so bad.
It is.
That's the lizard saying that.
So, but let's take it one step further because that's even a nice way of saying it, saying procrastination, right? That's one that you wouldn't feel terribly embarrassed to tell someone that. But let's look at what it really is. It's laziness. Being a sluggard, right? And it's quite easy, like I said, to say it's not so bad, but it really affects... It can affect your everyday. It can affect your entire life disastrously if you give in to every little thing that the lizard says in your ear. So I can remember having tests in high school and that I would need to study for. I knew they were coming up. I knew they were going to be in a week, 2 weeks, whatever it might be. And I would say to myself, I have the weekend. I'll do it on the weekend. I got other homework. I'm going to do it on the weekend. Weekend comes around. Other things become more important. Oh, it snowed really good today. People want to go sledding. This might be my only day to go sledding. I'm going to go sledding. Oh, I do have a few hours this evening to do it. Get home. Might not even do anything. But somehow you work it into your mind. I would work it in my mind and say, that's okay. I will do it in the morning on the bus. That's when I'm going to do it. And then I would put it off more and more. And I can remember many times frantically studying the period before when I should have been listening to what the teacher was saying, but instead frantically studying for a test that was going to be in less than 20 minutes. And what's even worse, another whisper that you get in your ear, is I can remember after the test thinking, I did pretty good on that. That was good. I did good. I didn't even study that much. That was good. And then the guilt sets in, and you think, yeah, but I should have studied. Next time I'm going to study. But what happens next time? But it is your choice, right? Because there were times where I did study the next time. But sometimes I didn't afterwards. And I would like to say that that was interesting. But if I'm honest, even happens sometimes in the workplace. It even happens to me now where I will put off doing something and then later I end up working overtime just to get it done. And it's not a good thing. And just like the ghost answers that question of kill it. Kill it now. The ghost answers it with, well, there's time to discuss that later. I have time to figure it out. And then, or he might say, well, gradually changing it would be better than stopping it immediately. After all, I don't feel that well today. It might aggravate what I'm doing. But what does the angel say? Kill it now. Stop it now. Because the more that you allow it to win, it's going to grow bigger. And that lizard is going to have more power in your life. So just because it feels good just to give in and say, eh, it's not so important. I'll just let it slide this time. Or maybe next time I'll put more effort in. That's not always the right answer. Just for sake of time, you don't have to turn there, but Proverbs, I'm reading out Proverbs 18:9. He that is slothful in his work is a bother to him that is a great waster. And then Proverbs 21:25. It is a snare to the man who devoureth that which is holy, after vows maketh inquiry. Oh, I read the wrong one. I'm sorry. 21:25. There's it is. The desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor. The Bible says it'll kill you if you don't do it right. If you're lazy about it. If you put it off. There are many, many, many verses in the Bible talking about laziness. And that's just one lizard. There are many other temptations that we have, right? We talked about lust a couple weeks ago. You might not have thought of laziness as being a lust, but what did we say a lust is? And you give into it, right? Well, there are times where it's time to get up, but I want sleep now. Right? I think we've all been there. Probably every... All right. I admit I do know some people that are always up at the same time right away and never just sleep in. But instead, we should kill that temptation and allow God to make us into a new creature. Sorry, one more verse. We just need to read this one because this is a really good one that applies directly to this allegory. It's in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 17. Evan, would you read that?
Yes.
5:17. Yes. Exactly what happened when he got rid of the serpent. He became a new creature. All things were made new and better. And real quick, what might laziness become if it was untwisted and the sin was taken out of it? There's something in there, a desire for something that's good. Because right, that was another part of lust. It, or a sin is that it is having it at the wrong time, in the wrong way, or the wrong amount. So what do you desire when laziness kicks in or procrastination? You give in to it. What do you want to do? What do you choose to do instead? Nothing, right? You choose to rest. Probably a lot of times when we don't need to rest. But there are many, many verses in the Bible that talk about God giving us rest. There is a time for rest. Yes, Sunday is a day set aside for rest, right? At nighttime is a good time to rest. We do need to sleep. So God will give you rest. But you have to do it within His will, to follow Him. So, the allegories in this book are about choosing to allow Christ to make you into a new creature fit for heaven. The ghosts that are here have not chosen Christ. They're not fit yet for heaven. That's why the world that they're in, that heaven, doesn't seem good to them. They just want to go back because they're not prepared for it. They haven't allowed Christ into them. They haven't broken down the wall. All right. Thank you very much. You guys have a good night.